Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows we've got our mysterious Baron here with us tonight. I've been talking about Baron for a few weeks now. Been a longtime online friend here. Hope to meet one day in person, but I'm glad to have him here incognito as usual. And, you know, there's lots of stuff I could talk about on the Gratwick front, but it's been a bit of a frustrating week. My Mac died trying to edit Sports Sushi last Friday. So if you're out there and you've been dying for your Sports Sushi, it's no longer fresh and raw, but it's still on my Mac computer that's somewhere in the Mac repair land. So we're going to dive right in and just get to the meat and potatoes of the show. Baron, thank you for joining me tonight.
Honored to be here, Chris.
I love talking to you. You've always got interesting stories, interesting life experiences, and interesting perspectives on everything. So let's kind of start from the beginning here. And how much of your background and kind of backstory are you willing to share with the audience?
Well, I can say that I've kind of been, I guess if there's any word to describe my online presence, it would be a lurker and a little bit of a troll. But I do have a good heart, I like to think. Me professionally, I do have an extensive history in different fields of work, which I find myself in the hospitality industry now, which is one of the topics I was hoping to discuss with you today, Chris, because I do have some interesting stories from my particular place of work.
So are you willing to share what part of the world you grew up in?
Absolutely. I was originally born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland, but my family's from Russia. I don't live in Baltimore right now. Not too long ago, I actually pawned nearly everything I owned at a net loss in order to move out of Baltimore all the way to the middle of Alaska, above the Arctic Circle, actually.
How long have you been in Alaska for?
Since this past August.
Have you seen the Aurora Borealis? Am I saying that right?
Aurora Borealis, yes. In fact, if you have if you would allow me 2 minutes to spare, there's a very, very interesting demographic we get specifically for the Aurora Borealis. Specifically, our particular hotel receives, whenever it's Aurora season, whenever the Aurora Borealis is often visible in the winter, because you can't see it in the summer, we have specifically very, very large amounts of tourists from East Asia, particularly China, South Korea, and Japan, who come to the hotel and try to schedule guided tours to see the Aurora Borealis. Do you know why that is, Chris?
Are you guys right underneath it?
Yeah, we are. But do you know why specifically we get so much tourism from East Asia for the Aurora Borealis?
I have no idea.
Believe it or not, it's something like a folk belief in the, I guess, Chinese traditional religion or Chinese folk religion, that if you are like a young couple and you conceive a child under the Northern Lights, that child will grow up to be very rich and successful. So we have a lot of like really young East Asian couples who travel all the way from like China specifically to book a tour out in the middle of the woods at night, like 2 a.m. to do that.
So you basically got run a little niche fuck pad.
Kind of, yeah. I like to think, are you familiar with the concept of Japanese love hotels?
No, I'm not.
Well, in Japan, a lot of the homes like literally have like the paper walls, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means that there's a distinct lack of privacy in a lot of Japanese homes. So in Japan, there's a whole industry of hotels called love hotels that have really thick walls, and they'll have like romantic decor in the rooms where people go to just do their business.
Man, I would go crazy if I had to go rent a hotel room every time I wanted to have sex with the person I live with. I might as well live in the hotel room.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it might sound like a dumb question. Are you right underneath it? But I guess what I was really asking is, if I rented a room in your hotel and I looked out my window at night during the right time of the season, would I be able to see it, or do I have to go to a certain place to see it? Or is it one of those things, if you're too close to the city, it's hard to see?
If you're too close to the city, it can be pretty hard to see due to the smog. However, it can be visible from the hotel in the middle of the night. What we actually do is, if somebody arrives at the hotel, they can sign up for Northern Lights wake-up calls. So in the very rare occasion that it's visible from outside the hotel or from the parking lot, we'll give you a wake-up call in the middle of the night saying, hey, the Northern Lights are out. Would you like to see them?
Oh, that's pretty cool. So what part of the year is the best time to see it?
I would say from January to February. That's like the golden circle of when you can see it.
Oh, right in that 2-month period. So do you guys jack up the rates during those 2 months?
Actually, no. Our busiest months are the summer. That's kind of when we jack up the rates.
I want to get out there. Have you ever seen like the full-blown Milky Way? Can you see that out there?
I haven't seen that, but I have seen Mars once.
When I was 16, I went camping in the middle of New Mexico for Boy Scouts, and we camped under the Milky Way, and like 2 nights out of the entire 14 days, it came out like the whole pink intersection of it, like the shit you see in the posters, man. And it was so big and all encompassing across the sky, like laying on your back, you felt like you could just wave your hand through the stars and all that. It was amazing. It's like one of the top of my list of things I want to see again in my lifetime.
I see. Yeah. You got to be really, really careful camping here, specifically, because not only do you have like the animals to deal with, like bears of all different varieties. There's bears of all different varieties. There's lynx. There's the moose are actually known to attack people too. They're very aggressive.
So, as somebody that grew up in a city like Baltimore and all of that, what is Alaskan life like? Because I mean, like I've got like the stereotype in mind: the small snowy town. They're like one out of every three people is a criminal and hiding out from the states. What's it actually like?
Well, that's actually not too inaccurate. There, one of the biggest, I guess, quality of life changes I've experienced so far after I moved here, and one I'm very thankful for, is we don't have a problem with gang violence anymore. There's not like a problem with gang violence here. Now, I've been told
nobody's around.
I've been told on some areas of the coast the Russian mafia are active, and I've been told some areas in the south the Hell's Angels are still a very real thing. But
wait, here. There's motorcyclists in Alaska?
I know, I don't get it. But where I'm at, the crime is usually sporadic and on an individual basis, and primarily influenced by meth, because methamphetamine is a big issue here.
I feel like this Hell's Angels presence has to be like an outpost where they hide their guys after they whack somebody and they turn in their Harleys for freaking snowmobiles.
Something like that, yeah. Crime is very sporadic. You'll have somebody who's like high on meth. They'll be like a shoplifter or just a public nuisance. But there's no like... there's no like drive-by shootings or big gang wars like you have in Baltimore.
Are you in an urban area, or are you like in a small Alaskan town?
Small Alaskan town. There's only like two big urban areas in the state that I'm hundreds of miles away from, which are Anchorage and Juneau. And again, I'm hundreds of miles away from them.
So does like everybody know when somebody that's not from around there is walking around?
Actually, no. It's very common for people who aren't Alaska natives to be in my particular area due to the close proximity of a very large military base. Not only is it not too uncommon for like people from other parts of America to be here, but we'll also get like foreign advisors, like from the Australian military, the British military, sometimes even the German military.
How are you handling being in like permanent winter, man?
Well, you know, I have to say this. I'm thankful I'm not in a dry cabin. You're familiar with what a dry cabin is, right?
Is that a cabin without alcohol?
No, it's a cabin with like no running water, right?
Oh.
I want you to imagine having to go to an outhouse in the middle of the night at minus 55 degree weather.
How can you even pee in that? It feels like it's going to be freezing in your hose.
I know, right? So, yeah, I do have to plug my car in. But if it – you only have to really plug your car in if it gets down to minus 20.
No, I'm talking about the dick or the pee freezing before it gets out of your dick.
Oh yeah, there have been cases where it'll actually freeze like into an icicle before it leaves your urethra. That's very painful.
Oh, Jesus, man. Have you experienced is it a month or a couple months where it's straight nighttime?
Yes, not straight nighttime. There'll be like 4 hours of daylight. You have to go a little bit further north than me to get like a few weeks of complete darkness. But I'm not quite at the area where there are polar bears and walruses yet. There's still like moose and grizzlies where I'm at.
So what's that like with such little daylight?
A lot of people have problems with depression and a lot of people who move up here, myself included, they'll actually find out that maybe their whole lives they had like dormant bipolar disorder. But once they move up here, it'll be like 18 hours of daylight in the summer. So that'll trigger like a manic episode, or like in the winter where it's all darkness, it'll trigger like depressive episodes.
I never really thought about this, but I feel like that's a good area for like vampire migration.
I actually was like I said, camping here, you have to be really careful because of the animals. I was just about to mention the supernatural element. There are a ton of cryptids and like quote unquote monsters here in Alaska. There's like skinwalkers, which have a different name here. Like all the different Alaska Native tribes have different names for them. There's skinwalkers. Plenty of stories about Sasquatch. Wendigo is a big thing here.
What's Wendigo?
The Wendigo is depending on what tribe you ask, it's a monster found in Canadian and Alaskan Native folklore that it's kind of like an evil spirit that possesses people and encourages them to engage in acts of cannibalism.
Interesting.
And not only that, I don't know the name for these, but the tribe that's the majority where I'm at have myths about like do you know what the kappa are in Japanese folklore?
I do not.
They're like you know, like the sirens from Greek mythology.
Yes, yeah.
They're like reptilian-like creatures that inhabit the local waterways and like try to lure people into the water to drag them down to the bottom. There's a native monster like that here. I don't know the name of it. But not only that, but I would go so far as to say the vast majority of buildings here in Alaska are haunted, because a lot of the buildings here are old, and a lot of the like you said, a lot of fugitives from justice from the lower 48 come to Alaska, and when you know the fugitives are in a given area, they like to cause trouble, and trouble often leads to the kind of stuff that leaves the energy imprints that ghosts are made of.
There's been a lot of violence and a lot of people that have disappeared.
Yeah, it's a different kind of violence than what I'm used to in Baltimore. In Baltimore, it's kind of like a structured, organized violence, but here it's more sporadic.
When it's 20 hours of nighttime and 4 hours of daylight time, there's a lot of time that you're awake and functioning and going about your day to day in darkness. Can you sense like an energy presence or a vibe within the environment?
Yes, there are some areas like I'll go to. You just get an overwhelming sense. You do not want to stay around there. You do not want to stay around there because there's like bad mojo. Some areas though, you'll find an overwhelming sense of peace. So it's kind of a flip side.
All right. So, have you ever seen anything in the skies?
In the skies, I personally haven't. Although I've heard from people that sightings of Foo Fighters or like UFOs is a lot more common a couple hundred miles north, where you're like in the tundra.
So how close are you? Do you know the distance from where you roughly are to the top of the planet, like the whatever is true north right now?
Let me check really quick. I am. Hold on. I know I'm 200 miles south of the Arctic Circle.
Okay.
I am 2,471 miles from the actual North Pole.
What's your thoughts on the Hollow Earth theory?
I think Hollow Earth theory, to be honest, has a lot more credibility than Flat Earth at this point.
I guess the logistics of it don't make sense to me, but I also feel like there's definitely something at the top and bottom of this planet that is off limits.
Yeah. Not only that, but Hollow Earth is just present in so many... I will say that Hollow Earth is present in so many different mythologies, whereas Flat Earth is honestly limited. It's more like a Middle Eastern... It's usually restricted to Middle Eastern mythologies.
Are you familiar with the cosmic war theory at all?
Unfortunately, no.
After we're done here, I got to send you a playlist that I have of Joseph... Oh, what the hell's his name? Joseph T... let me find it here. One second. Joseph P. Farrell. Joseph P. Farrell and the Cosmic War Theory. This dude wrote like a dozen or so books where he cross-referenced all sorts of ancient mythology, all sorts of Egyptian texts, all sorts of Native Americans and tribal texts, cross-referenced it with like geology, astrology, cosmology, all of the different types of sciences and studies, and put together this hypothesis that there was like basically an ancient interplanetary civilization in this solar system that was on Mars, was here. There was another planet called Titan. And ultimately, shit went down. There was an intergalactic war. The Scar of Mars is basically a giant laser mark that carved the side of it, blew the atmosphere off of Mars. Titan was destroyed and blown up, and that's what created the asteroid belts. And all of these things led to like the flood, the biblical events that happened on Earth. And like it leads into the Nazis, crystal skulls, freaking basically it's the mother lode of every single story and theory, all intertwined with circumstantial evidence and ancient text to create one all encompassing story. That's just mind blowing.
I see.
Yeah. And he did this, I think it's 32 hour and a half to 2 hour interviews that I've got collected on a playlist on YouTube that I'll send you. I think you'll find this stuff fascinating.
I'd be very interested to see it.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know how much of the different components of it you're already aware of or have researched in your findings and all of that, and your thoughts on how they all connect together.
If I can, I'd like to tell you about the specific room at the hotel I work at that is haunted. In a sense,
yeah,
that is haunted.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's just right where I was going to transition to. Well, let's hear what's going on in this place. So set the stage for us first. How old's the hotel? What's the kind of the layout look like? What's the vibe of this place? Are we talking the hotel at the top of the hill and the Shining?
It's actually sort of in town, but the hotel itself was built in the 1950s. The first half, at least. A second half was completed in the early 2000s. Ironically enough, though, the carpet, like, are you familiar with like the interior design of the hotel from Stephen Kubrick's The Shining? Just like the different, like, the interior design looks very, very similar, to be honest, like with the carpet patterns.
Nice. So it's got a creepy vibe to it already?
A little bit, yeah. But, Room 277 in particular is the haunted one. There are two entities that kind of inhabit this particular room, and they're most active around 3 a.m. And before I talk about the entities, do you know why 3 a.m. has such significance with the supernatural?
Is that the darkest hour of the night?
It's called the witching hour, specifically because...
I know the witching hour.
Yeah. 3 p.m. was the time where Jesus Christ was supposed to have died on the cross. So a lot of evil stuff in the supernatural is all about the inverse of good stuff. Mm-hmm. So since 3 p.m. is when Jesus Christ died on the cross, 3 a.m. is where, like, evil spirits are most active, or other... other supernatural phenomenon. There's also been a number of scientific studies that say that the human mind is the most receptive to other kinds of influence at 3 a.m. because it's a time where most people are like deep in REM sleep.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
I've got an entire script written on the REM theory.
Yeah. But the two entities are, there's one of the ghosts is said to be a middle-aged, extremely morbidly obese bald guy. And when I say extremely morbidly obese, I mean like 550 pounds, completely bald, right? Extremely pale skin. And what he'll do is...
That would suck to still have to be fat in the afterlife.
Yeah. What he'll, I guess too much ecto cooler. But he'll take his finger and he'll scrape it against the carpet. He'll scrape it against the carpet to make a lot of noise, right? And he'll shake the beds and he'll otherwise let me check my notes. Oh yeah. And he'll even poke guests on the shoulder while they're trying to sleep.
You guys still rent that room out?
We do. We actually get a lot of people who are interested, who specifically request that room.
Yeah, I was going to ask that if that happened.
Yeah. And the other spirit that's there is it's a very, very frail, like skinny, even lanky, like Eskimo guy. or like Native Alaskan guy. And after like the scraping on the floor or the shaking of the bed or the poking on the shoulder will happen from the other one, he will be outside the door and he'll look into like the little viewing hole, like trying to see what's going on in the room. And my personal theory is that the first spirit, like the morbidly obese one, I think he was like a miner, because like where I'm at is like pure gold mining country, gold and silver mining.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of gold mines around here, but I think he was a miner at one of the gold mines. He could have been like shuffling the rocks or sorting through them, not necessarily with the pickaxe. But my theory is he was a miner who must have done something pretty awful in that particular hotel room. Something so awful that he was never able to, I guess, make atonement for in his life or find peace for in his life. So he's just kind of stuck there in a state of flux.
Scratching the carpet.
Yeah. The other spirit, I think, was somebody who was a witness to whatever went on in that hotel room back in the day. And was just so horrified by what he saw, it left an imprint. I don't think he's, like, stuck on this plane. I think that's just, like, an echo, if you will.
Have you ever seen The Lady in White?
No, I haven't. I do know that, the Siberian Yupiks, which are the Siberian Yupiks, are a tribe that's a little bit to the south, southwest of me. But they believe that syphilis, that if there's ever going to be large cases of syphilis or smallpox in like a village or a given population, there will be sightings of a Russian woman with extremely pale skin and red hair. Because back in the colonial days, when Alaska was still a Russian colony, syphilis and smallpox were introduced to the Siberian Yupik populations through like the Russian like fur traders and all that came here. Mm. So they believe like if you see like very pale Russian woman with blaring red hair and like pitch black eyes, that's the sight that there's going to be like a major disease outbreak of some kind.
Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about the echo spirit, the Lady in White is a horror movie set in New England, and the basic premise is this old schoolhouse, a schoolboy was murdered in the coat room, and then his body was carried to a nearby cliff and thrown over the edge. And every year on Halloween, the spirits reenact the murder, and the ghost of the boy does, and because the killer is still alive, so he's not there, and the boy's in the coat room, the echo, and he gets strangled and killed, and then his body's floating in the air limp as he's being carried to the cliff and thrown off. That movie terrified the shit out of me when I was a kid. But when you talk about like a spirit echo and just replaying a moment over and over and over again, that's immediately what I thought of.
I see. I'll have to look into that movie.
So does your hotel like keep a record of that room or like notes or?
Of course, yeah.
What's it up to? Like, how many incidents have there been?
Ironically enough, we haven't received any complaints about that particular room. It's just kind of been like any other room we have in the hotel, just one with a particularly dark and interesting history. Sometimes if we get people like who deliberately want to stay in that room, I hate to admit it, but we will sometimes charge a premium for that experience.
You guys giving the fat man a cut?
No.
So there's no old timer or somebody that has a hypothesis on the backstory of who these people are?
I haven't heard any stories from them yet. No.
Bro, you know what you need to do, don't you?
What's that?
You need to go to your local library and you need to dig out the microfilms.
That's something I might try to do. Yeah.
There's got to be some old news story or something about what went down at the hotel. Yeah. I mean, if the hotel was built in 1950, its history is short enough and recent enough that anything that's happened in it had to have made the local news.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. You gotta dig into that for us and see if you can figure out who the fat man was.
Yeah.
All right, so is that the only, like, in your entire time in Alaska, is that kind of the only active supernatural experience or interaction that you've had is with that room? Or just in general, have you seen or experienced anything?
This is the only supernatural experience I've had so far. But I will say I haven't really had the chance to, like, be in the woods for an extended period of time.
Doesn't sound like a good idea.
No, if I am in the woods for an extended period of time, I guarantee you that the chances of me experiencing something supernatural are going to skyrocket.
So has anything like odd happened within the small town or anything? Is like people showed up to go camping and then they never came back and just disappeared, or just in general, unusual things happened in such a remote small town?
Yeah, there's a few things that there's a lot of weird stuff that happens every now and then. I don't know if you could call this weird, but we get a lot of snow here. Right? We get like multiple feet of snow in the winter, right? Whenever the spring comes and all the snow starts to melt, we have a lot of people who go missing like before the winter starts, right?
Show up.
A lot of people who go missing before the winter starts, and all winter you'll see missing persons posters everywhere. When the snow melts in the spring, we find them. A lot of times it's due to alcohol, but
we've got a reverse scenario like that happening here in California. Just today in Lake Mead, the water has evaporated to such a low level that a barrel from a missing person, I think they said it was from the 60s or whatever, that was killed in Las Vegas, was found in a rotted, decayed barrel that was exposed because the water's so low now.
Yeah, I will say though, like, you're from LA. Are you familiar with Skid Row?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Well, the particular place I'm in, I have no idea how they survive, but we actually have a somewhat bad problem with the homeless.
Really?
We do
in Alaska?
Yeah, and surprise, the vast majority of the homeless we have here are from the, like, Alaska natives, like Eskimos of different tribal backgrounds. God, but
point south and tell them to take a walk.
No, one of the things I have to deal with as working the night shift at the hotel I work at is under constant siege from crazy people, whether they're just homeless and down on their luck, or they're strung out on meth, or there's some other serious issue going on. And a lot of times, like, in the middle of the night, we'll get people who come in and they're just cold. Like, they're really cold from outside. And they'll ask if they can stay in the lobby and warm up for like 15 minutes. And if they're not causing like a huge problem, then I'll let them stay for like 10 minutes. But if they're like methed out and like talking and like making threats to people or being a public nuisance, then yeah, that's when security has to be called.
How in the world could somebody survive homeless in Alaska? It seems like they'd freeze to death within a week.
I honestly have no idea. I've been told that there are certain, they'll like they'll like hide under bridges, and they'll like have they'll scrounge up enough money for like camping equipment, and they'll just like set up their tents underneath some of the bridges.
I think they build an igloo.
Yeah.
All right. I've held off as long as I can, Baron. Curious. I'm curious as all hell about Phantom Time.
All right. The Phantom Time theory is basically the belief that the entire first half of the Middle Ages never happened. Are you familiar with the who Charlemagne was?
I know the name, but I don't know the backstory.
Charlemagne was really like the first French emperor who basically founded the Holy Roman Empire, right?
Okay.
The Phantom Time hypothesis states that there was kind of like an international conspiracy between the Holy Roman Emperor Otto III, Pope Sylvester II, and the Byzantine Emperor Constantine. I'm sorry, I'm terrible with Roman numerals. Do you know what VII is?
Seven?
Constantine VII, thank you. To basically fabricate the calendar so that all of the years between 614 and 911 AD were basically fabricated. So like all the history we know about any year from 614 to 911 AD is just a fabrication.
So before or after the fact?
After, well, if the years never happened, it would have been, after the fact. So we're in a year 2022 right now. 2022 minus 297. That would mean the year is not currently 2022. We're currently living in the year 1725.
I don't understand. Like, okay, so let's say it's year 613 or six. What's the window from when to when?
614 AD okay. To 911 AD.
So it's 614. It's December 31st on 614. And then tomorrow we're just telling everybody it's the year 911 or. Is that basically what the theory is? Is that
you have to remember that the early Middle Ages was a time where calendars were being constantly revamped. Are you familiar with the difference between the Julian and the Gregorian calendar?
Not specifically, but I'm aware of the two different calendars.
Let me ask you: are you familiar with how in Eastern Europe? Orthodox Christian Christmas is celebrated a few weeks after the Christmas we celebrate here in the West. Or like how in Eastern Europe, Easter is celebrated a few weeks after. That's because in Eastern Europe, they use what's called the Julian calendar, which was a calendar system designed by Julius Caesar to replace the old Roman calendar that was astronomically inaccurate. And in the halfway through the Middle Ages, there was a Pope Gregory who created the Gregorian calendar that was made to replace a lot of the inaccuracies that were there in the Julian calendar. And the reason the Gregorian calendar isn't used in Eastern Europe is because it was created by a pope, and in Eastern Europe their form of Christianity doesn't adhere to the pope's principles. So they still use the Julian calendar. Now, this was a time where calendars were being constantly revamped, especially under the guise of a church authority, right? Mm-hmm. So it would have been the perfect excuse for the Carolingians to collaborate with the Pope and the Byzantine Emperor to say, here's a new calendar reform. Turns out we got what year it is wildly inaccurate. Trust us, this is the Pope saying. And nobody really would have questioned it because the vast majority of the population was illiterate. And to question the authority of the church would have been putting your physical safety in serious jeopardy. Not only that, but it would have made scientific sense if you're correcting a lot of inaccuracies from a prior from a calendar that used to be in use.
So, man, this is already blowing my head just trying to think about it. So, how does it work? How do we have 300 extra years that are like, is there any, is it just a 300 year gap where we don't have any proof that anything happened in there? And so the theory is that it was just made up, or is there, how does the gap work?
Would you like to hear some evidence for the gap?
Absolutely.
Well, for one, there is a very large scarcity of archaeological evidence that can be reliably dated to the time period of the gap. So like 614 to 911 AD. So the theory is that it's not that that period was like the darkest of the dark ages, which it really wasn't, because the Middle East and China were flourishing at that time. And they would have had archaeological evidence from Europe that would have gotten there through trade. But the fact that they don't have that much archaeological evidence from Europe at all, and that we don't have archaeological evidence from that time period worldwide at all, shows that there might be that gap.
Wait a minute. Wouldn't China and all these Eastern countries, wouldn't they have been keeping score themselves?
That's actually a flaw in the theory. In that China actually has their own record of the gap that is accounted for separate of the Western record. But supporters of the Phantom Time Theory state that it's possible Imperial China could have covered up the gap for different reasons. The other evidence for the gap is that is the idea that dating methods used for that particular time period, namely radiometry and dendrochronology, are pretty inaccurate. There's also the notion that medieval historians vastly rely on written sources as opposed to other kinds of historical sources. That and the presence of Romanesque architecture, i.e. architecture that has clear inspiration from like the classical Roman or ancient Roman period in 10th century Western Europe, suggests that the time period of the Roman Empire was not that long ago from when medieval Europe was at its height. That and again, there's the notion that the Phantom Time Theory or the gap closely matches to when all of these calendar reforms were being made in Western Europe. So
if it's accurate, then basically one day the peasants were walking around thinking it was 1614, and the next day they were just told that it's actually 911.
Something akin to that, yes. And do you know what the whole reason, because there has to be a reason behind any conspiracy. Like nobody just wakes up one day and comes up with a very elaborate conspiracy that could compromise several people's reputations and integrity without having a purpose for it. Would you like to know the purpose?
Some men just want to watch the world burn.
That's always a good reason, but no. like I said, this was originally this was a conspiracy people suspect that was originally orchestrated by the Holy Roman Emperor Otto III, who is a descendant of Charlemagne, or supposedly a descendant of Charlemagne. In medieval Europe, having legitimacy to your right to rule was paramount. If you didn't have a legitimate claim to your throne, that would have been carte blanche for somebody to overthrow you or kill you. So if you read Charlemagne's story, it's pretty impressive by the standards of the day, and how he basically turned France and Germany from nothing into a potential successor to the Holy Roman Emperor and rival of Byzantium, which was the most prosperous society on earth at the time. So fabricating all those years would have given the Holy Roman Emperor's carte blanche to fabricate the entire, I guess, genealogy and family history of the Carlovingian dynasty, which basically would have cemented their right to rule. Now, the question is, why would the Byzantine emperors, who were staunch rivals of the Carlovingians, agree to go along with conspiracy? And my personal theory is because the daughter of a Byzantine emperor, Irene, who actually married Charlemagne. So I think that if the Carlovingian family legacy was tainted by a lack of legitimacy, it would have come back to become a problem for the Byzantine emperor's legitimacy.
So how does the gap benefit them?
The gap benefits them by saying that, let me put it to you this way. How far back of your family history do you know, Chris?
Unfortunately, not very far. Only to my great-grandparents.
Now, if you were to fabricate an extra 400 years of your family history and include details about how, like, you were the direct descendant of Alexander the Great, or a great conqueror, and also millionaires who have inheritance rights to, inheritance rights to the Rockefeller fortune. That would be very beneficial for you, right?
I guess. It'd be pretty hard to pull off.
Well, that's exactly what the Holy Roman Emperors and the Byzantine Emperor and the Pope basically pulled off. They basically fabricated 400 years of family history so they could have more legitimacy in maintaining their offices of political power, and also extended claims to different inheritances and land disputes that were going on at the time.
I mean, I could see how the peasants would just be like, whatever, I don't give a fuck. I'm out here as a serf doing some bullshit. It's whatever year you say it is, guy. But I don't get how the other, like, lords and kingdoms and everybody else is like, hey, we're in a land dispute with you, and you're suddenly now trying to tell me it's 300 years later than we thought it was. How convenient for you, guy.
Yeah, the theory is not flawless. Like I said, the two biggest holes in the theory are why would these different political figures in medieval Europe, who all have their own competing interests, all agree to a conspiracy of this magnitude? And China has their own independent record of those missing 290 some years. So.
Are you familiar with the electric universe theory?
No, I'm not.
That's one of my ones that I feel like makes the most sense. And basically the gist of it is everything is electric currents. Consciousness is electric currents. The stars, the universe, it's all energy. And this explains alternate dimensions. It explains the reverbs of spirits, things like that. And based on that, I have a theory, because if it is an electric universe, then consciousness is really just being received by the human body, which is a radio receptor. And if that's the case, consciousness could theoretically be pushed or received in an alternate location. So I have two possible theories. The first one is that if there's a way to shift consciousness to a new receptor, it could be the key to traveling the universe and traveling across large distances of time, where your body doesn't actually travel, but your consciousness does to a new receiver. And then the second part of that theory I have is that when you're talking about electricity and currents and all that stuff, one of the most powerful manipulators of that kind of energy is magnets. So I think, and then going back to what you were saying earlier about how 3 a.m. and REM sleep is the time when the consciousness is most loosely connected to the body, so it's easily manipulated or messed with. I think the right magnet settings or power with the right disconnect of the body during an REM period, you could potentially shift consciousness to the next dimension over, or the closest one to it. And the more powerful the magnets and the alignment, the farther a dimension away you can shift the consciousness into what is basically an identical receptor in that dimension.
I have to be completely honest. I am very, very averse to basically sending your consciousness to a different dimension by itself, because I do believe that the consciousness, or what I believe to be the spirit and the body, they protect each other in many different ways. And there are a lot of like nasty creatures that inhabit other dimensions. Like, are you familiar with the elevator game?
I don't think so.
The elevator game is a method that was popularized in South Korea to basically, it's like a glitch in reality that you can use an elevator when switching the different floors in the right combination. It supposedly can take you to another dimension, but that dimension is inhabited by like very evil, malicious deities. I would do some research into the elevator game, especially since you're in LA, because are you familiar with the death of Elisa Lam?
Is that the chick in the crazy hotel?
Yeah, her body was found in the water.
Yeah.
There's speculation that one of the things that led to her death was her trying to do the elevator game. So,
how is it supposed to work?
Let me see if I can read the rules for you.
All right. So while you're looking that up, I'll talk. So back to where, when I was doing the Boy Scout camping in New Mexico, there's 200 square miles of land that was donated by the natives, and maybe the story is that they donated it, but it was really taken. Who knows? But it used to be native land, and it's now all Boy Scout land. And one of the plateaus on the grounds or in the land is in the shape of a skull. If you look at like the elevation map, the elevation map looks like a skull. So it's called Skull Plateau or something like that. And apparently the local lore and story is that there used to be native dances and that done on the top of this plateau, and there's like stone doorways that were gateways to different dimensions and different places, pretty much. And at some point, this tribe just up and walked through one of the portals and never came back.
Yeah, you got to be really careful when you're dealing with portals and stuff. But I have the rules for the elevator game here. I don't think
Candyman,
something like that. Yeah,
is it a certain number combination?
It is. Yeah.
Dude, somebody found a cheat code to the elevators?
Pretty much. Yeah.
How'd they live? How'd they live to relay the code?
I don't know.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this numerical combination. Is this why there's no 13th floors anymore? Is the 13? The 13 has to be in the number combination.
Okay.
Because this would make far more sense that people kept showing up in the hotels trying to play the number game if 13 was a part of the equation. So they decided if they removed the 13, nobody could do that shit anymore, versus we're afraid of a 13th floor. And by taking the number off there, that doesn't make the 14th floor still the 13th floor.
Okay, here are the rules. Begin at any time. Enter your chosen building and proceed directly to the elevator. Call the elevator.
What if I go to the bathroom first? Does it negate the whole code?
I think you have to do this like all at one time, and you can't have any interruptions.
No stopping in the lobby.
Yeah. Call the elevator. Use only the up button to do so. If a down button is present, do not touch it. When the doors open, enter the elevator. You must enter it on the first floor, and you must enter it alone. Do not proceed if anyone else is in the elevator with you. Press the button for the fourth floor. When the elevator reaches the fourth floor, do not get out. Instead, remain in the elevator and press the button to go to the second floor. When you reach the second floor, do not get out. Instead, remain in the elevator and press the button for the sixth floor. When you reach the sixth floor, do not get out. Instead, remain in the elevator and press the button for the second floor. When you reach the second floor, do not get out. Instead, remain in the elevator and press the button for the 10th floor. When you reach the 10th floor, do not get out. Instead, remain in the elevator and press the button for the 5th floor. When you reach the 5th floor, a young woman may enter the elevator. Do not look at her. Do not speak to her. She is not what she seems. Do not get out. Instead, remain in the elevator and press the button for the 1st floor. At this point, one of two things will occur. The elevator will begin descending to the first floor, or it will begin ascending to the 10th floor. If the elevator descends, the ritual has failed. Do not proceed. When the elevator reaches the first floor, exit as soon as the doors open. Do not look back. Do not speak. Exit the building and don't look back. You may try again at another time. If the elevator ascends, the ritual has succeeded. You may proceed. Note, though, that if you're having any second thoughts about what you're about to do, if you find that you are losing your nerve, now is your last chance to back out. To cancel the ascension and terminate the ritual at any point, press the button for any floor in the building besides the 1st or 10th floor. You must cancel the ascension before the elevator passes the 9th floor in order to terminate the ritual. When you reach the 10th floor, you may choose to either to exit the elevator or remain on board. If you choose to exit, and if the woman entered the elevator on the 5th floor, she may take this opportunity to ask you where you're going. Do not answer her. Do not look at her. Exit the elevator without comment. Now, look around, but do not lose sight of the elevator in which you arrived. You will, it said, find yourself in another world. And although you may see things and notice many details, you'll know you have arrived in this other world. You will know for certain. By one indication and indication only. The only person present in it is you. And there's return instructions as well.
Bro, how many floors are in your hotel?
Only 8, unfortunately. Aww.
We gotta get somebody to try this.
we better give them a really good life insurance policy then. There are all sorts of stories posted on like Reddit and other social media about it. This is going horribly wrong for people.
Come on, seriously?
I don't want to end up in like the middle of a water tank like that woman in LA.
I need to read some of these war stories.
Yeah.
But no, I think we definitely got to get somebody to live stream it and to do this on a live stream. Somebody had to have done it on a live stream. There's no way.
I would hate to see somebody do it with and I had like the woman that they mentioned in the instructions, like ask, where are you going? And you're not supposed to answer her. But the guy has a text-to-speech device, $2 super chat. Oh, well, he's going this way.
you realize this is a perfect movie setup, right?
It is, yeah.
All the stupid horror movies that have come out these days, Elevator Game would be fantastic.
Like Ginger Dead Man 3, Saturday Night Cleaver. That actually stars Gary Busey, if I'm not mistaken.
Of course it does. Of course it does. I have a Gary Busey story. Do you want to hear my Gary Busey story?
Absolutely, yeah.
So years ago, like when Entourage was like still in its heyday, the show Entourage on HBO,
mm-hmm.
One of the first jobs I started out in the entertainment industry was I was a teleprompter operator for this rental company in the Valley. And they would get booked for jobs, and I'd show up, I'd pick up my teleprompter equipment, then I'd show up on set, I'd attach it to the camera, and then I'd sit off screen, and I would turn the teleprompter for whatever it was being used for. Usually commercials, industrials, shit like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the one of the bookings I get booked for is an Entourage show promo or teaser commercial for the show. And it was some goofy ass rap commercial where like the characters were all doing like different verses. They were all rapping the promotional copy. And then it cuts to, and even Gary Busey's here. And literally the entire shoot for the day was just supposed to be a 3-hour shoot of fucking Gary Busey reading what amounted to maybe 60 words that were in 10 lines on a teleprompter, right? Mm-hmm. Gary Busey shows up 3 hours late to a 3-hour shoot. Fucking, there's three girls on set that are supposed to be like hanging off him while he's got sunglasses on doing his little rap. And it's just literally cut to Gary Busey. Busey does 3 bars of rap, fucking back to everybody else. That's all it was supposed to be. The entire fucking day gets hijacked by Gary Busey. Fucking the dude gets into it with the girls because he's trying to grab their asses, and the girls don't want any part of it. They're not pissed off. They don't want to hang on him in the for the promo because he keeps grabbing them while the cameras are rolling. It's just an entire disaster. He's yelling at me for how fast I'm turning the teleprompter wheel. It's just like everything you would expect from the full Gary Busey experience. And the irony of it is this was like 6 months before we made The Perfect House. And we were talking to different people and different managers, and we were trying to find people to play some of the characters in there. I don't know if you've ever seen my movie, The Perfect House. But there's an old crusty killer in the third vignette, and there's a young, like 30s aged killer in the second vignette. And we were talking to a manager. It's like, I can get you Gary and Jake Busey for those two characters. And we were like literally thinking about it at the time. Like, do we want to be in a fucking basement in Buffalo for 12 days with fucking Gary Busey and his son? Like, and like that Entourage shoot was literally the determining factor. I'm like, this fucking guy couldn't do 60 words on a teleprompter without turning the entire day into a disaster. I would kill this guy if me and him were locked in a basement for fucking any amount of time.
And I see.
Yeah, so we ended up not going with Gary and Jake Busey. But so we're gonna wrap up here. Don't want to go too long because I have to go back and edit all of this nonsense. So okay. I'm gonna follow up with you when we jump off here and get you the link to that playlist. And definitely check out the Electric Universe if you haven't, because I think energy is the key to everything.
Absolutely.
So before we jump off, do you got any last words? Anything you want to share, pimp? Anything you're working on?
I'm sorry I was so hard to get a hold of the past few weeks, but I'm very happy I was finally able to get on the Gratcast with you. So thank you for having me.
You are a lifelong friend of Gratwick, my friend, and I hope to sometime soon come up and check out your hotel, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, I will give you a discount if you come here.
Hey, don't be a stranger within the Discord, even though I know mystery is part of your allure. But, you know, we've got monthly game nights. We've got weekly on Wednesday nights. We hang out and do music hour and play songs and play stupid trivia games. So don't be a stranger, buddy.
Okay, cool.
All right, man. We will talk in the Discord.
Yep. Have a great day.
All right, you too, man. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.